Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome to the madness. It is Follow the Money, Sharp Week on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard with you. Live in Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino was a spot. 3 hours of joy coming up today with the madness now upon us. Fran Fraschilla on the program coming up in 1 hour. My favorite college basketball analyst, Dallin Cuff, also on the program coming up in 90 minutes. Future fish market with our best bets, plays that we put in pocket last night after the brackets were revealed, Pauly. Some future bets to take a pop at today as well. And heavy, heavy, heavy college basketball, as you could imagine. First of all, I will start by saying this. I thought it was refreshing last night watching the show. And after it was over, with once they brought on the NCAA tournament chair, Keith Gill, what do we typically do today and also the day after those dumb shows that they have for college football throughout the entire year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people are lost. They never give you any answers. There is no sense of structure to how they're trying to put this thing together. I thought that was maybe the best example of a guy who gets it after the brackets were released that we've ever had on TV. Tip of my cap to Keith Gill.
Yeah.
He answered everything. He had something for the broadcast and for the audience the entire time, the way it felt.
Mm-hmm. And I have nothing to complain about. I thought, in terms of who got in, I think, Joe Lunardi nailed it. He got everyone right. I think a lot of people also got everything right.
Yeah, they did.
I don't think there's, one team that can complain about being left out. The Auburn thing, Bruce Pearl, I don't think is allowed to comment because he's on the payroll. He shouldn't be allowed to comment on anything Auburn related. And he was trying to say SMU should be out. But, Auburn, with all those losses and 16 losses, is what did him in as well. And you can't put a team only one game over 500 in the tournament. I just was surprised Miami of Ohio was in the play-in to go undefeated in the regular season. Either you think they're good or you don't think they belong. Seemed like a compromise to me. And then I could not believe that VCU would have been out if they didn't win yesterday. They are 16-1 in their last 17 games. And as Dallin Cuff said numerous times, why did they get rid of that last 10 metric?
Mm.
How are you playing going into the tournament?
Yeah.
I think is a huge metric. And one thing that probably knocked NC State into the play-in too, because they limped to the finish line. But I thought that was astonishing what he said, that VCU needed to win that game yesterday.
That it feels like it's convenient for some teams and then they just forget about it with others. Like Purdue, he said, Keith Gill, that they were the 11th team overall before they won the Big Ten championship. And they moved him up to like the 8 line or the 8 seed overall. And that would put them on the 2 line.
Yeah, does the conference tournament mean?
It mattered for them.
Right.
But I would also then come back and say, I know Arkansas was supposed to be on the 5. You also gave them the second or the most difficult bracket as the 4 seed. More on that coming up in a little bit. But because everybody panicked that Miami, Ohio was the last team in. He explained that they, in fact, were not. And he had reasoning behind that. And I will also go back to this. Last week on the show, prediction markets. Remember how it was explained where teams to qualify for the field of 64, Miami was a monster favorite to get in. If you took the no on that, that means that they had to actually make it. Or the no means that they did not make the field of 64 or they made the play-in game and they have to now win that game. So yesterday before the brackets were revealed, Miami was plus 177. And if you took that number, they now have to win this game in order for you to lose that bet. I hope that's not too confusing because the prediction markets have it field of 64, not field of 68. But also, he said that SMU was the last team in and that injuries played a major reason why. Thank you for actually saying that.
Right. Yes. That third leading score, Edwards, he referenced. Yes. Well done. Absolutely. And that's now Miami of Ohio got us up to as high as an 8.5-point dog. So that was a solid bet if you made that wager. I know Hoops Peterson loves Miami. It came down to 6.5, although they are the most bet team as of now in that game at BetMGM. So I'd be careful with that. But that was, how about St. John's? St. John's can't be a 5.
I would agree.
That's never happened before. You win the regular season and the conference tournament back-to-back years, and they're a 5. They're pointing to what happened in the non-conference. Again, they're a hot team as well. Thumped UConn. They didn't give the benefit of the doubt to St. John's, I felt, and that was unfortunate too. And Utah State, a 9 seed, they win the regular season and the conference tournament. They shouldn't be a 9. They should be better than that. Missouri was safely in. That was a surprise. Purdue a 10, and NC State in the play-in, while most people had them as a bye. So those were some surprises, I felt.
Okay. I would say that St. John's not being flipped with Kansas was kind of egregious, but in the end, does that really matter? That they're the 5 and Kansas is the 4? Maybe not. The winner, in theory, of that game, if they do meet, will get Duke down the road, and that should be a pretty decent game, I would think. Also, I would say that Michigan and Florida somehow got the easiest regions. Duke and Arizona. Duke's the number one overall seed in this entire bracket. I would say that either them or Arizona got the bracket of death, and that ties into Arkansas. When I saw Lenardi, he had Arkansas moved up to the 4 line yesterday, and he had him in Michigan's region, and he nailed like the other top 4 seeds. I have this future bet on Arkansas last weekend here from the blackjack tournament that pays a healthy amount of money. If Arkansas would be in Michigan's bracket and Alabama would be in Arizona's, I would double down, I'd triple down on Arkansas. I would absolutely have Arkansas beating Michigan to get to the Elite Eight. But now they have to go potentially through Wisconsin and then Arizona just to get there? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That is a buzzsaw.
Why? Why? I don't think you should be that concerned. You have a coach in Tommy Lloyd who until last year had never... Every loss was against a worse seed.
Oh, no, but I mean, this is his best team, too. And the fact that Arkansas got Wisconsin potentially in the second round, come on. Nobody wanted to see that. At least I think I'm speaking for the entire audience here, right? Already in the second round to get those two teams, one of them is going to be bounced. Both those teams can do some serious damage. Mm. I would have separated those two.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, I am shocked at the point spreads.
Oh, boy. That's the biggest story of the whole thing.
It is. Number one, no bid thieves. There were 5 2 years ago. So that helped out all these teams on the bubble. And certainly, VCU had to have the game, too. So no Dayton as they got beat. No bid thieves. Astonishing. But the one thing right off the bat were how high these point spreads are. And is NIL going to hurt the first 4 days of the tournament? That remains to be seen. But we didn't have upsets last year. And if this goes back to the mid-80s now, late 80s. If there's going to be an upset, it's going to be monumental when you look at this. For example, at Caesars, will a 4-team win a game? A game is 4-1. Every 12 seed is at least a 9-point dog. We've had 12 seeds favored numerous times, or at least pick them. We've had 13s against 4s that have been close. So this is staggering what these numbers are for these point spreads, and the fact that even Penn, the Ivy League has done well. They've won 6 times going back in the last 14 years, and they're usually a 12, 13, or 14 seed, even though I know Penn was an upset, but they're a 23-point underdog.
More than that, I grabbed 24.5 today.
Okay.
This show is brought to you by ProfitX, and right now, King of March is giving you a shot at free trips worth up to $10,000 just for betting the tournament. Download the ProfitX app and use the code VSINMM. And to your point, and this goes back now several weeks, I told you that the first bet that I was going to look at was the sum of all seeds to make the Final Four. If it was a high enough number, my biggest bet, I was going to unload it like every app to go under. Yep. I also thought the number would be 9.5. Bam, that's where they put it, 9.5. Actually, DK has 8.5, and the over on that one is even money. But the sum of all seeds at most books, 9.5 under is -130. How is that going to play out then? I had all 4 number one seeds making the Final Four last year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to happen? Or did we see maybe a little bit of the luster get worn off of those top seeds over the weekend enough to maybe make you say, yeah, I'm not so sure I trust them anymore?
I don't think there was that incentive to win for some of them. Yeah. And it was going to happen that they were going to play close games. You might be right, but they're highly power rated. I got creative. I took Gonzaga to come out of the West because I didn't want to be boring. But it's... You want to make the case again for the one seeds? I can't call you crazy or talk you off after what happened last year and how high they're power rated. Well, more about the spreads. David Purdom had this. The average spread in the 4-13 game is 14.3, largest ever. The average spread in the 3-14 game is 19.5, largest ever. All 4-2 seeds are at least 20-point favorites.
That I can't remember happening.
First time since 1986.
Oh, that's why I can't remember it then.
There you go. And it's the first time that all 5 seeds are laying at least 9 points against the 12.
Yep. There was a year, I want to say around 18, 20 years ago, Calipari was at Memphis, and one of his teams, this is before Derrick Rose, they had the one seed, and I want to say that they were laying like 15 or 16 points against the 16 seed. That's the lowest I can ever remember.
Yeah.
So think about, and again, times change, obviously. That's now a long time ago, but now you have all these two seeds laying numbers that we haven't seen in 40 years, basically. And I have much more on this coming up in a little bit.
Yeah.
It's absolutely startling where some of these point spreads are. But also, and I'll say this, the market keeps driving them up for the most part.
Well, there's going to be a case to be made for a lot of these dogs, though, because you're right. The point, not to win, but the point spreads are so high. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked at what happened with how big these are. And, you know, we had that run where a 15 was winning almost every year. A 15 to win a game is 7-1. A 14 to win a game, 4-1. A 12 seed to win a game is plus money.
I'll give you another angle on this, Paulie.
Yeah, 13 is no minus 180. So I want to see that prop when they come out with, will a 16, 15, or 14 win a game?
Yeah, I'll expand on that because one of the most popular markets that bettors have looked at now for several years going is the team to have the most points in the first, you know, the first to 10, the first to 15.
That's great.
So, but because dogs come in so often, the numbers on those dogs came down over the years. They got to bump them back up because these point spreads are so big, and I don't know if books are going to do that. So more on what Paulie's talking about, these spreads looking higher than normal. First time in the tournament in 40 years, and Chris Felica with some great numbers we're going to share coming up next.
Hey, let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. It's March, which means the madness is officially upon us, and the folks at VSiN have gone crazy with this one. For $29.99, you get unlimited access to VSiN Pro through May 1st. I'm talking picks throughout the tournament, public betting data for every single game, sharp tools, projections, articles, and more. Just click the link in the description to get started. It's March, baby. Now back to the show.
Follow the money.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. Follow the Money is brought to you by ProfitX. And right now, you can compete to become the King of March and win free trips up to $10,000. Download the ProfitX app and use the code VSiNMM. Heavy college basketball throughout the entire show today, as you can imagine. And that's how we begin the hour, by going out to the Progressive Guest Line. I think our next guest is the best at what he does. It's Fran Fraschilla, dynamite on college basketball coverage throughout the entire year. Fran, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time today. How are you?
Oh, it's always great to be with you guys.
So last year was the second time ever in the history of the tournament that we had four number one seeds make the Final Four. I've been having that feeling all over again for many weeks. Do you kind of sense a chalky tournament again? If not, where do you think the dogs are going to be barking from?
Well, chalky from the top for sure. Like, I think the Florida Florida Houston matchup potentially one versus two in Houston could be problematic for Florida. That makes sense. Arizona, I've seen all year. I think they've got a great chance to get all the way to the, road, if you will. San Diego and San Jose. I love that team. I think they might be the best team in the country right now, going into the tournament. And then, you know, the East bracket, we've talked about how heavy it is with six Final Four coaches going to the are in that bracket. So I worry about Duke. No Caleb Foster. We'll find out. I guess Gamba's going to be back. But Duke would be a one seed that would scare me a little bit because of the experience of all of the coaches in that bracket in this tournament. And, you know, guys, it's interesting. The best of the best, the Izzos, the Patinos, you know, the Selfs, the guys like that, they understand that it's not a six-game tournament. It's really a four-team tournament, three weekends. So these guys prepare so well. You know, they're so focused on this coming weekend, and they're not thinking any further ahead. That East bracket looks like it could be problematic for Duke if you're talking about one seeds.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. You were excellent as a coach, and especially at Manhattan, when you won a game. I was shocked how many current coaches spoke up and said Miami of Ohio shouldn't have been in the tournament. I couldn't believe, because you know how hard it is to win. Ask Navy, ask Yale. I can't believe coaches were anti a team that didn't lose a game in the regular season. How do you feel about that?
Well, I got a couple. There's a couple of different things here. They did play a very weak non-conference schedule. Having said that, having coached in both MACs, I was in the MAC at Ohio University as assistant, where we had guys like Ron Harper and Dan Marley in the league at the time. We had two NBA players, Grant Long, who played a long time in the NBA. So I know that league. That league is very, very competitive. I mean, you take – the sad part about that league in most years is they only get one team in. This year, because Miami lost, you know, Akron's going to join the party, and they're always very feisty. When my team in 1995 went to the NCAA tournament as a 13 seed, you guys may or may not remember, but we got in as an at-large at 25-4 because the committee felt we lost in our conference championship in double overtime.
Okay.
We had beaten St. Peter's easily in both of the regular season games, and they played great. We played well. They played great. And if that team that ended up beating Oklahoma, by the way, the coach was Kelvin Sampson, and we became good friends after that, we would not have got in the tournament that year, and because we couldn't play anybody. These teams like Miami of Ohio, if you come into a season, if it's a Belmont, if it's a Miami, if it's a Furman, you know, none of the big boys really want to play you. And if they play you, it's always, always going to be at their place. So I have no problem with Miami getting in because of the incredible consistency. I'll never forget the late Bob Frederick, who was the AD at Kansas at the time. He took a lot of heat when we got in the tournament. And when we beat, again, Kelvin's my friend, we were up 15-17 in the second half, and we were the better team that day. If my team were in this particular field, we would not have got in because of the analytics. So sometimes eye test overrules the analytics.
Well, I want to ask you about that. And the point spreads this year in the first round, Fran, are the biggest that we've seen in 40 years. Like Purdue, for example, is a 2 seed. They're laying now 25.5. Illinois is a 3 seed. They're laying 24.5 against Penn. I mean, this is like uncharted territory that we're in here. If these teams are up by 27, 28 late, it doesn't matter to them if they, I mean, right? I mean, they're going to empty the bench, one would think, to get some of the guys off the way deep on the bench to get some tournament action here.
You guys are thinking like guys who, as my friend Brent would say to me when we'd be in Kansas or Iowa, the boys in the desert know the best, okay? And so that's a great point. I think the reason I think the spreads are so large right now with the 1, 2, and 3 in seeds is that you got it's the transfer portal. The teams that are 11 through 16, yes, they won their leagues, but remember, a lot of these teams have been poached already by the five power conferences, and so I don't think like I'm trying to think of my Manhattan team, for example. I had five starters on that team, were all underrated. They were all New York City high school, Catholic high school kids. I would not have those guys after my first season with them because they were all Big East players.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But nobody knew it at the time. So what you're seeing, I think at the bottom of the brackets is a lot of the teams, yes, they won their leagues, but they're not powerful enough, you know, to be like a 4-13 upset or a 3-14, which is common. 12-5s obviously are very common, but 13 through 16, I don't think they're as strong as the 13 through 16s in the past because of the poaching of the best players on those teams year in and year out.
Very good. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, Fran Fraschilla, great college basketball analyst on ESPN. He's on the Progressive Guest Line. Before you popped on, I was just talking about how much I absolutely love Darius Acuff's game, point guard for Arkansas. And I was like, I think he should be in the mix for the number one overall pick in the draft. He averaged 22-plus points and 6-plus assists as a freshman. The last freshman point guard to do that was Pistol Pete Maravich. I mean, that's just, come on, how good that is. Overall, your thoughts on him and Arkansas? I know they got the Arizona draw, but what do you think of that team going in off that SEC tournament championship?
Well, I love it. First of all, I love it for Cal because he's a longtime friend. We've known each other since we were 19. We We worked Dean Smith's basketball camp together. We didn't even know each other, Pittsburgh and Brooklyn. We've been friends since we were 19. We used to steal extra lemon meringue pies out of the UNC cafeteria. We still talk about that. And John doesn't want to pay for anything, so that was a good thing. But I love that team. Now I don't love them when they get to match up against Arkansas, because I got Arkansas winning it all. Darius Acuff, I saw him in February when they actually lost to Kentucky at home. You guys may remember that. And he did not play his best, and yet I fell in love with him. I knew him from film. I knew him from USA Basketball. I'd seen him play, and to me, he's a clone of Damian Lillard. And the reason I say that is because I've always found, and I'm getting in the weeds here, guys, but Baltimore, Detroit, St. Louis, Oakland, those kids come out of high school with a chip on their shoulder. They're not L.A. They don't get the hype of the Chicago and the New York kids. And this kid absolutely plays with a chip. And I'll just remind you guys that the Minnesota Timberwolves took Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio over Steph Curry. He went 7. Mm-hmm. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe the best guard in the league right now, went 11th. And oh, by the way, Jalen Brunson went 34th, and he's possibly headed to the Hall of Fame. My point is, even in this draft, which we've talked about the top three ad nauseum, the likelihood of a Caleb Wilson or a Darius Acuff being the best player in this draft 5 years from now is always high. Because let's face it, if everybody in the NBA knew what they were doing, they'd all end up 41-41 every year.
So that's a great line.
There's going to be mistakes. And if you tell me, I'll tell you this right now, I don't think the top three is going to stay the top three when it's all said and done. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if Peterson drops to 4 or 5. Now, that's sacrilegious to say. I've seen him a lot. I think DeBonsa is rock solid there in the top two. Mm-hmm. Boozer, absolutely. And I don't care about the Athletic. The last guy I saw this on Athletic was named Jokic, okay?
Yeah.
So don't give me the athleticism stuff. But I'm with you, Paulie. I love Darius Acuff.
Yeah. And then for the record, you said that you have Arizona winning the whole thing, yeah?
You know, I haven't done my bracket yet, but I can only tell you that based on what I've seen of the 4 seeds and then the 2-line, 3-line, I've been around Arizona all season long. They lost 2 games in 1 week in February. They lost at Kansas in a desperation game for Kansas, mm-hmm. and then shockingly lost at home to a very good Texas Tech team, which now is very shorthanded without JT Toppin. But I saw them beat Houston at Houston without Coapete and out without the Aristode. I think this is as complete a team as you'll find in the tournament. They're really missing nothing. They're really missing nothing, guys. Coaching, depth, size inside, shooting. And by the way, as good a two-way point guard, he's not Darius Acuff, but as good a two-way veteran point guard as you'll find in Jaden Browning.
Yeah, Fran, great stuff, man. Love talking to you so much. Thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the tournament, okay?
Always enjoy catching up with you guys.
Thank you. Great job. Great point about being at Manhattan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised by that? Several current and former coaches.
Yeah, bothers me.
Yeah. Like, you know how hard it is to win games.
Yep.
And he's right about scheduling, too, how difficult that is.
Let's follow the money on VSiN. The Sports Betting Network. Up next, we'll get into the betting guide coming up later on today and some bracket advice. Hint, don't get too cute.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
More college basketball here. Dallin Cuff joins the program now. He's going to be on first and second round coverage, TNT Studio this week for the Madness, also SiriusXM and the Field of 68, and he is on the Progressive guest line. Dallin, good to talk to you again, my man. How are you today?
Mitch, Paulie, always great to be with you guys.
Feeling is mutual. Did you have any complaints watching the coverage last night for the teams that were put in with any of the seeding or with any of the chairman's comments after everything came to a conclusion there?
first off, shout out to CBS. I mean, they got to the bracket before I put my phone down.
40
like,
seconds
I mean, Zucker
in.
Was like, here we go.
Yes.
I was like, yes. Yeah. This is awesome. So I was like, whoa, let's lock in. So I love that. I think the coverage was great. I think the committee, by and large, did a good job. Mm-hmm. And that partially, a lot of the bubble teams didn't make it hard for them. Like a lot of these teams that needed to make plays down the stretch and made win one or two games, a lot of them lost out of the gate to not make it that hard of a conversation. That said, the bubble was kind of weak. I think they did a good job. The few gripes I would have is all about seeding. It's Vanderbilt, probably not a five. Mm-hmm. People got a lot of talk about St. John's. Bear in mind, St. John's beat nobody in November, December, and played a lot of teams and beat nobody. So at best, they could be a four, an absolute best. So if they're a five, it's more about the five in the region and the plays they have coming up that I think you can complain about. But them being a five is not a big deal. Wisconsin, questionable a little bit. UVA, maybe a four, not a three. But they're in the margins. I think by and large, they did a great job. Gil did a great job, the committee chair. Mm-hmm. He was outstanding, the Sun Belt Conference commissioner. I thought his explanations afterwards were great, and particularly around Miami, Ohio, which is one of the biggest stories in college basketball this year. He was explaining just where they fell in, how it worked, how they get scrubbed against different teams. I personally thought, and this is, I'm glad he explained this too. I thought, hey, it's the human nature of this thing. It's the storylines of this thing. And a bit of it is, you know, we're setting a precedent. If you go undefeated in regular season, we're going to put you in the main bracket. No, based on their numbers, they're where their numbers should be. They should. If they kept them out, it'd be ludicrous. But to put them in Dayton is kind of where they belong. So let's go give them a chance. Now that does actually help the conference because if they do win this game, they get a unit. They get probably $600,000 or $700,000 this year that goes to the league. So you get an additional chance to win a game against an opponent that may be more like you to give you a chance to do it. So it may ultimately do them favors for the league and for Miami of Ohio if they can win the game. But they're in the dance despite not winning the tournament, and they got a chance to keep going.
I thought you made an excellent point on USA Network on the Atlantic 10 coverage. Why did the committee get rid of the last 10 criteria? As you say, I echo your sentiments. I want hot teams entering this thing.
Their thing is they want to make sure that the whole season matters, Paulie. So this is November, December. If you put the last 10 metric in, it devalues the November and December. My argument is all you guys then are doing is overvaluing November and December and not paying attention to what this team is. You're saying that it's the whole breadth of the resume. But in current modern college basketball, with the turnover of these teams is so drastic. Mm. The team you're getting in November and early December is totally different than one you're getting in March. So let's reward that. If you had a hiccup or two in November, December, or you had some losses, then you can overcome that. And in March, when you've won 10 of 11, 9 of 12, or in VCU's case, is who I was talking about, when you won 20 of 22, like who are we looking at now? And we have evidence of a couple years ago, UVA came in, losers of like 9 of 10 or 8 of 10, and they got boat raced in the first round by 30. Like they couldn't play, looked terrible coming into it, and you knew it was going to happen, and they were still seated as a favorite there, and it was a joke. That said, I don't think it's the determining factor. There's a lot of data on these team sheets. Just give me the last 10. I want to know how they're playing right now. I want to know what they look like right now. And if they've won 9 of 10, that should at least be in my head and thinking, well, this team, I don't know, maybe I don't know the exact who they've played in that stretch, but they're playing well enough to win games. And that should mean something versus, hey, they won games in November, December, and they stink now. I don't want that.
Yes.
We totally agree. And by the way, the best point, I think, of all of that you just said cannot get lost, and that is there is so much turnover now in college basketball. It's going to take a long time for these teams to actually get used to playing with each other. So we might be able to excuse like an early season blip on the radar, November, December, and then they're probably a truer, you know, team come February and March.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. This to me shocked. I was shocked when I was watching it last night because I didn't want it to happen because I thought that Wisconsin and Arkansas were going to be two of the biggest sleepers. So maybe it's a good thing. And then all of a sudden we get them in the second round potentially. That's a hell of a second round game, Dallin, if that's what we're going to get here.
The number's going to be astronomical on this one, guys. I mean, I know the Georgia-St. Louis line is, I guess, opened buck 70.5, and it's on its way up. But if these two teams play, I think we might be looking at a number in the mid-170s. That said, I really like Wisconsin's team. Nick Boyd has been there before, too. I mean, he was one of those key starting guards that played in FAU. So he's been to a Final Four. John Blackwell is an absolute stud, and they space you, and they can knock down shots. Arkansas has the best offensive player in college basketball in Darius Akoff. The best offensive player. He's outstanding, this freshman. The problem, guys, is I don't even know if defense is optional with him. Defense is just like, not a big deal. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas, when they defend, they can be really good. My problem with taking them deep is you do need to guard, and you do need to have some approach to do that. And when you have two freshman guards and him and Malik Thomas that are really dynamic offensive players, but you can take it or leave it on the defensive end. I can't trust that as much. So I like Wisconsin in that matchup. I think it's a great matchup. I think outside of that, Arizona got a really good draw. I think they have the weakest 2 seed in Purdue, the weakest 3 seed in Gonzaga, but I do think they have the toughest 4-5 matchup. Either way, whether it was Wisconsin or Arkansas, and like I said, I think it's going to be the Badgers, who, bear in mind, have won at Purdue, at Illinois, at Michigan. I mean, this is a great example, guys. November, December, they got boat raced by other quality opponents. We're talking losing by 30. You switch into January, February, March, they're a different team. Those guards are really going, and those are road wins against quality teams. I mean, a 1 seed, a 2 seed, and a 3 seed, and they have other good wins at home. This Wisconsin team has really improved the course of the year. They play fast. They shoot it. They all can shoot it. I really like the Badgers.
There are some gigantic point spreads early, but can you make a case for a dog and an upset here outright?
I do like Akron straight up against Texas Tech. I know it's trendy, but I've been saying Akron's the best team in the MAC for 5 weeks. Like they played the same schedule as Miami of Ohio, except they had to go to Miami of Ohio. That's their only league loss. They went on the road, lost by a couple points back on January 3rd. The other loss since then has been to Troy. They went and played a mid-conference game against a really good Troy team who's in this bracket, conference champ, and lost by a couple on the road. But John Gross's team, they can space you. They can shoot it. Johnson's an elite guard. I really like their team. And then when I say they're playing the same schedule, Miami, Ohio was getting by the skin of their teeth. The Zips were blasting teams in the MAC, and that's a good league, and they were working teams. So I don't know what Christian Anderson's situation is. And we pulled up Lame in the Big 12 Conference Tournament. He's huge for what they do. We know Texas Tech can shoot it. Their bigs are good, but not great. Of course, you're playing without Toppin. And I don't think their size advantage will be as stark. They're just not as deep. Watts presents some problems matchup-wise, but I like the Zips here. I think they can win this thing in a 12-5 game. The other game that I think is really interesting, I don't think they're going to win it, but I love the number, is Hofstra plus 13.5. Okay. I liked it last night when you think about how Hofstra plays. It's Speedy Claxton's team. They're one of bottom 50 tempos in the country. They play slow. They have the CAA player of the year in Cruz Davis, a guard that can just get his own bucket. Preston Edmead, freshman of the year in that conference, great other guard they have, who honestly probably won't be playing for Hofstra next year, but that's unfortunate. But that's how college basketball works right now, talented freshman. I think they can slow the pace of this game down, make it more of a half-court game, stay in the game. And, of course, we know with Alabama, it's make or miss. If they're off on their threes, they could lose. That said, Aiden Holloway did get arrested today. Yeah. I feel bad for the young man. I don't know what was going on there. Pound of marijuana in the residence. That's a felony in Alabama. He's already out on bail. I have no clue what's happening legally. I have no clue what's happening in their program or their head. All I know is Hofstra's fully locked in. And they play a style by which can be effective against Alabama to stay in the game. And if Holloway's not there mentally or physically, that really changes this team, because they don't have a lot of inside presence to beat up. You want some of the challenges of mid-majors is when you can't handle it physically, when you can't withstand their front court or their wings are too much. This team doesn't really present those challenges as much. So I really like Hofstra with the 13 points.
All right. Stock down for you by chance on Florida and or Michigan based on how they fared in their conference tournaments?
Let me just give you Florida. Absolutely not. I think that was a game. They were down. They were bound to play a bad game at some point. Mm-hmm. Fine with it. This team is still elite. I still have them. I have them winning the national championship. Okay. I mean, going back to back, playing Arizona in the final. I do think Iowa State beats Michigan in the Elite Eight. I think that's a tough matchup for them if Iowa State gets there. I like Iowa State's draw in the bottom part of that bracket. I think Santa Clara beats Kentucky. Tennessee cannot score. I cannot watch them play offense anymore.
Oh, that sucks.
I would rather go down to the grocery store and watch them unload the trucks than watch that team play on the offensive side of the floor anymore. It is painful. So I'm not scared of the six. UVA can present some problems. But Iowa State against Michigan, one of the problems Michigan has without LJ Kaysen is a really good backup guard.
Yeah.
He's out injured. He's done for the season, which stinks for him. Elliot Kendo can struggle with some size and some length at times. He gets sped up. We saw it a little bit this week too. He struggled. Iowa State's what they're going to do. They're going to get at you. They're going to blast ball screens. Going to keep it on one side. Michigan's bought a 14th out of the 18 teams in the Big Ten in turnover rate, offensive turnover rate, about 17% of their possessions, bottom half of the country in that overall on the whole season. We know that's what Iowa State does. They're top five in the nation, and defensive turnover rate, they're going to get after you. They're going to turn you over. And if Milan Momcilovic is shooting it like he has for the majority of this season, and Joshua Jefferson's presenting that matchup problem that he is, I really like Iowa State. I have the Cyclones getting through Michigan and getting to the Final Four.
Very cool. Dalen, you're living the dream this week, man. First and second round coverage on TNT with all these games. Have a great time with it. Enjoy the games. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate that.
Anytime, guys. Be well.
Thank you. You
Dalen
too.
Cuff, back at you on the Progressive Guest Line. Also, Sirius XM and the Field of 68. We're on the same page with one of those bets that he talked about, and we're going to go to the future-ish fish market coming up next. Short-term futures We're on ahead of the tournament coming up on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
So we do have an update. We were just talking about this with Dale and Cuff moments ago. The Alabama game against Hofstra, Bama lane 13, and what happened this morning with Aiden Holloway, the team's second-leading scorer, busted with, was it a pound of marijuana?
Yes.
So Alabama has released a statement moments ago, quote, "The university is aware of the allegations and is working to gather more information. The student has been removed from campus pending further investigation by the University of Alabama Office of Student Conduct." End of quote. I can't imagine a scenario where he's going to be playing in the game. Second leading scorer, they're lane 13. Hofstra, by the way, at KenPom is number 87 in the country.
How about the timing stinks? Number one. Number two, he's your second leading scorer. Number three, Luke had a great line. Who tipped him off to search the place? Probably a Hofstra guy. Hofstra alum. How about, hey, this guy's up to no good. Check his place out. He'll find the good stuff. That is right. Oh, God.
Get him off the team.
But
that do whatever
is,
you got to do.
That's incredible. Maybe well-known around campus. I don't know. But
maybe.
It's like, hey, our second leading scorer, Dr. Feelgood, by the way. If you want to see him, go up to the apartment, check him out. He got the good. Oh, my God.
How about, is it possible an ex? Did he recently break up with a girl? Did he cheat on somebody somehow?
Remember BYU that one year?
Oh, of course I do.
They got the
They ratted out on it.
One of the best players. Because he was hopping on the good foot and doing the bad thing, and you can't have premarital sex.
Can't do that at BYU.
They broke
the code. Somebody found out, and they took. Can you imagine the world that we're living in for that to happen?
That was a good team.
Oh, that was a Jimmer team.
Yeah.
Was it not?
The center was kicked off the team. He had premarital sex.
That kid could score, man, on the basketball court and off.
Yeah.
One of the only BYU players to ever evidently do that.
Brigham Young had like 90 wives, and the whole thing's preposterous, right?
Well, that show with Bill Paxton on HBO.
Right. He had premarital sex. He's married to half the city.
Yeah.
Come on.
Pound. He's not playing. You want to take the 13
now? No, he can't play. No, Dallin made a good breakdown. Yeah, that was a strong breakdown. Northern Iowa, definitely.
Definitely.
Yes. You know, I like to bet against teams that win the conference tournament and come and smell on themselves, right? So I'm also against Purdue. Number one, it's also a ridiculous point.
It absolutely is.
Purdue's got to win by 25.
I'm thinking the same thing about Arkansas.
Yes. Hawaii, Northern Iowa, Troy. I'm with them on Akron. And favorite standpoint, Georgia. It's a play against St. Louis. How St. Louis limped to the finish line. And another one, too. I was watching the numbers go up on the screen right as the matchups were announced. DraftKings did put up a 9.5 right away on Kansas. Then they took it down and put up 11.5. And now it's 14.5 against Baptist. So maybe they don't blow them out. I don't know. But I certainly love Daniels, the player of the year for Cal Baptist. He is fun to watch. But those are some plays I like. Not a ton of futures. But you have some stuff, and there's some good stuff up and coming out in the guide. Make sure you get our guide, which is excellent, and Adam Burke and the crew always do a great job. I love the creativity from Jensen Lewis, who's got some good stuff that he parlayed, like Purdue and Gonzaga to make the Sweet 16.
Okay.
He's got that at a good price. He's got South Florida winning outright. Very popular, though. I like him as well. This parlay's $1.20 at DK. Duke and Michigan to reach the championship, plus 515 on DK. And Aaron Moore's got a good one. He has Houston plus money to reach the Elite Eight. Don't give me your dissertation on the rollover parlay. I know more people who have chugged beers with the Easter Bunny than actually perform the rollover parlay. More rights. That's great.
That's funny.
A couple of good stuff there, and you'll love this. He added Acuff to be the number one pick.
Well, that's definitely me, but I don't have that in the guide. Does Moore have that in the guide?
Yeah, Moore in the guide.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we have more here. Yeah, it is Sharp Week here, Paulie. So it's time now for the future fish market that we're doing on the show. Great graphics by everybody involved here. So I did bet Purdue to make it to the Elite Eight. Look, again, and I wrote this in the guide, I'm about as big a Matt Painter fan as the next guy is. But did I fall asleep? And were the Boilermakers rewarded with a one seed overall? I cannot believe the draw that they got. They were the 11th team, according to the committee, before they won the Big Ten title game. And now they were bumped up to the 8th team in the two line. They get Queens, huge favorites.
Yeah.
They get Miami, Missouri. Okay. Maybe some resistance. Maybe Miami can give them a game. Maybe Missouri, whatever, will hang around. I think that's a great matchup, though, for Purdue. And I'm telling you, I'm calling my shot right now. We disagree with this. The NC State-Texas winner is not only going to beat BYU, they're going to beat Gonzaga.
Oh, come on.
I
see. Yes, 11s usually win a game. Absolutely.
Sure.
Happens every year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they beat BYU or they played better defense in the tournament. That's aggressive. Because the NC State comes limping in, and so does Texas. It's strange to see Gonzaga. No one's talking about Gonzaga.
Oh, nobody is.
Under the radar with that record.
Right. So, look, when the bracket was released yesterday, I told myself, in amazement over Purdue's draw, if they are any plus price whatsoever to make it to the Elite Eight, I'm going to bet that. And I found plus 115. And then I looked at Bart Torvik's site, and he has, he runs all of his sims, and then he breaks down the numbers of odds to win the title, odds to make the Final Four, odds to whatever, et cetera, for the every round. He has a 52.2% chance for Purdue to make the Elite Eight. That's the fifth best chance out of any team in the bracket. And they're supposed to be the lowest ranked two seed. That translates to minus 109. I was already betting plus 115. I'm like, that makes me feel pretty good about that. So that's one. I've been thinking this for a long time. Out of the top four, the weakest one to me is Michigan. Their bracket is a dream bracket for them up top, but I think it's a bad matchup for them against Iowa State if the Cyclones make it that far. I got Iowa State making the Final Four plus 340.
That's a tough question. Who's the most vulnerable one seed?
I think it's them.
Yeah.
I think it's them. I think Arizona is... Well, first of all, Florida and Duke.
It was an incredible resume Arizona put.
It really is.
With that schedule, 32-2.
And I'm not going to panic about Florida losing to Vanderbilt either, like Dalen Cuff. Duke's injuries, they look like they were a concern in the ACC tournament. Like, if they linger, maybe they can be had because it's such a difficult region. And Arizona, they have dudes everywhere. Iowa State to make it at plus 340, and I'm sticking with my guns here. Again, I picked St. John's to go to the Final Four, filling out my bracket. I have a bet on them from months ago to make it that far. So I love Patino, man. He's my favorite coach in the history of college basketball of my lifetime. Love him. I wish he would have stayed at Kentucky. Would have dominated the sport, but that's neither here nor there.
Yep.
I also, other bets that we'll get to with in-pocket plays, there are a ton of them. I know, again, that the NIL could be a huge factor here in this event that we have grown to love for so many years. And maybe there is true separation. We don't get as many upsets. I got to take some of these dogs at the points.
You have to.
I have to.
These are big time point spreads. The other thing, too, he's outlined near the top of the show is some of these high totals. A lot of these totals are crazy, too.
Well, I hope they live up to that, too.
Yeah.
And that tells me that we're going to be in for some very entertaining sessions on at least Thursday and Friday. Because we have several games lined in the mid-150s, and then forget about that. Like, from 165 and up, there are, what, 5-6 different games? Where the like, Georgia-St. Louis, both teams could score 100.
Yep.
And, in fact, I will probably look at playing some high point averages 90 a game. Mm-hmm. What do you think that game is going to be like against Wisconsin? Maybe both teams score in the 80s or 90s of that game. I think there's a way to get creative by doing some... I don't know about parlays, but some team totals and outing them going over.
All the money brought to you by ProfitX. 10 plays wins $10,000. ProfitX running the King of March, where you can win free trips worth up to 10 grand just by betting the tournament. Win 10 pregame spreads or totals across the 67 games and hit your volume goal. Flights, hotels, wherever you want to go, ProfitX covers it. Every additional 10 wins earns you another shot. 1,000 in volume, you're entered for the 5K trip. Hit 10,000 in volume, you're entered for the 10K trip. Just download the app, use code VSINMM, and start winning VSINMM, King of March, only on ProfitX. Enter now.
I'll give you another one. Why can VCU not beat North Carolina?
Should. Well, they should.
Yeah.
I think it's a great matchup for VCU.
Like Dallin said, 16-1 last 17, yeah. 20 of 22. That's got to be a metric. To me, that's one of the most important things I'm looking at if I'm on the committee, your last 10. And they are on fire, and Martelli did a great job. And they blew out St. Joe's, blew out Dayton. Mm-hmm. Great job. And certainly with the Wilson injury, they're catching UNC at the right time.
Greg Peterson in the guide has Penn plus 24.5, Tennessee State plus 25 against Iowa State. Again, this is unheard of with the twos and the threes and the fours and what they're laying. Up next, we're going to give you one set of criteria. Every title-winning team has matched since this website started more than 10 years ago. And I'm not talking about KenPom.